All right, it's about time to begin our class this morning. The guys are passing out handouts. There's two pages, I think, to the handout again today. In Genesis 15, 16, and 17. Okay, while they finish those up, let's go ahead and get started with our little catch-up review where we are here. We have some visitors this morning. We're glad to see you here. We're looking at the book of Genesis. We're starting our three-year narrative cycle, and we've gone through the first five chapters, which talk about the period before the flood. We've talked about the next five, six through ten, which include the flood and all that's involved in it. Chapter 11 then being the one chapter on the scattering of the people, the Tower of Babel. And then we started into the patriarch time, Genesis 12 through 50, and we're, I looked at 12, 13, and 14. With 12 being the chapter with the promises made to Abraham. And then we'll go to the review, picking up then with 13 and 14 we had last time. We'll review those a little bit this morning and get into 15, 16, and 17. Put this slide back up. I've had it up, the last several times. We talked about promises that God made, to Abraham particularly. God makes promises. God keeps promises. The people of old acted based on their faith, based on what God had told them he would do. And God has made me promises, and he will keep those promises based on my faith and my obedient action. I will be able to enjoy those promises. Stickers clicking this morning. Keep this slide in mind. Hang on a minute. Got a frog this morning. Keep this slide in mind. We're going to come back to it toward the end of the class and talk about this very point some more. So keep this thing about faith and actions in mind as we go through the class this morning. All right, looking at chapters 13 then. Abraham comes back up out of Egypt. He's back in the land of Canaan. He comes, he's been out there because of the famine. Comes back up and goes up to Bethel. It's just him between Bethel and Ai, the point he had been before. Back there. And we talked about then Abraham was very rich, or Abram at this time was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And we'll pick up this 318 trained servants in chapter 14, but that just indicates he had 318 men in his household, born in his house, that were able to fight. And so he's a very large household, a very rich man at this point. Blessed by God, without a doubt. So he was very blessed and that. But he was also, even though he was rich and blessed by God, he was faithful to God. Now there was times he made mistakes, and we'll get to some of those. We talked about those. But overall, we talked about his faith, the great faith of Abraham. Worship God, back when he got back to Ai, between Bethel and Ai there again, in chapter 13, verse 4. So he asked the question then, are the faithful always rich? If you're rich because we're faithful. Of course, the answer there is no. And then to turn it around the other way, are the rich always faithful? And of course, that's not true either. We looked at some passages that talk about riches and wealth and heaven. We've looked at this several times before already. The family tree of Terah, Abraham's father, Abram, and his two brothers, Nahor and Haran. Haran's one we're going to pick up because that was the father of Lot. So Lot is with Abraham, so keep this in mind. Now, I'm going to go ahead and put this up here. We don't get to it in the class later today, but keep in mind Hagar up here. We'll get to her today in 15, 16, and 17. Hagar, and then she had a son, Ishmael. So we'll add more to our knowledge of the family tree here this morning. We'll get to that. So Abram and Lot are both wealthy. Both have lots of livestock, and the land will support both of them. They got to separate. And there's friction between their servants because of this, and there are other people already in the land. So you think about these two rather large, massive, rich men with all their livestock, and this is not enough ground to stay together and feed them. So it's time to separate. So Abram, he's a patriarch, he's Lot's uncle, and you would think that he might get first choice, but he gives Lot the choice to make here. maybe keep him in peace, maybe just to help him out. Or maybe I might help out one of our children, or whatever. But he lets him make the first choice. And then Lot chooses the well-watered part of the Jordan. I had some pictures up here last time with that area there. And we talked about choices, and maybe he should have left the choice to Abram first out of respect for him, or took counsel on which way to go, but he didn't. He pitched his tent towards Sodom, and we'll talk about the results of that a little later on. So he made the choice, apparently without regard to spiritual things, went toward the city of Sodom, which is very, very wicked, and from that. Then we talk about our choices based on all this. What kind of choices do we make? Do we respect others? Do we respect our elders and those who might give us wise counsel? Do we seek our own way instead of looking to help from others? Trust our own judgment. Perhaps the false appearance is the well-watered plains of the Jordan. On the other side of that was Sodom was. And he did not look at that perhaps out there. And the spiritual effect on what we're doing, the choices we make out there. In the next chapter, then, chapter 14, Lot is captured. Chedorlaomer had control of apparently the area down around the Dead Sea, Sodom, Gomorrah, Zoar, the city is listed there, and a couple of others, five kings down there. And in the 13th year, they rebelled, and Chedorlaomer got three of the kings, four coming down against five, captured territories. They came down and fought with these men down there, the five kings from around the Dead Sea, and they took Lot captive because he was in that area there at the same time. So when he's taken captive, Abraham takes these 318 trained men to fight out of his household, and he goes north to pursue Lot to rescue him. Goes up to way up in the north part of the country to Dan, and on off to toward Damascus, the capital of Syria. And we looked at that last time on the map, perhaps as much as 100 miles he chased them up there to find and bring back Lot and the people. Brought back Lot, his goods, the other people that were taken captive there. They came back and met Melchizedek, king of Salem. Bible scholars tell us that's probably Jerusalem, king of Jerusalem, king and priest, mysterious type guy. We don't know much about him from what's talked about in the Bible, but he is a representative or a type of Christ. He is a king and a priest. Our high priest, Christ is. And his king means, king of righteousness, his name means king of righteousness, or righteous king. Abraham gives him a tenth, a tithe of all that he had taken back. Abraham would not take any of the spoils. He said, I don't want anybody to say you made Abraham rich by taking the spoils back. He gives them to his men, and he gives Melchizedek this tenth of the spoils as he came back there. So that brings us up to chapter 15. We're ready to start with that today. So chapter 15. First part of this chapter talks, we look at God's relationship to Abraham. God appears to him. And what words is, there's two words he uses there when Abraham talks back to him. He calls him my what? What? Somebody see that? My sovereign. What's a sovereign? You don't use that word every day. What is a sovereign? A ruler, a monarch, so an absolute control of authority. We don't see that. A king is a sovereign ruler. Total authority. That's what he refers to God in. The sovereign Lord, he calls him. The relationship they have here. What's Abraham's concern? Abraham's concern is, what's he been promised? Through your seed, all the people will be blessed. All these nations will be blessed through you. But, what? He has no child. He has no son. So how am I, all these people going to be blessed through my seed when I have no seed? I have no son. Can't quite comprehend that yet, it seems here. So God tells him that an heir is coming because he makes these promises to him about his descendants and the land he's going to inherit. What's he already used before to illustrate this to Abraham? The dust of the ground. You've got to put the dust. That's how many your seed will be. Here he comes with stars. We go outside in here in town and look up and see the stars at night. Yeah, we see lots of stars. Some of you who go camping a lot might think about how many stars you see on a dark, dark night. So Abraham, go out and count the stars. Can you count the stars? Of course, there's no way to do that. That's what your descendants will be like. You can't count them. There'll be so many of them. So again, he's reinforcing that promise he made to Abraham here. Now, come to a very important verse, and we're going to get this verse more at the end of the class. Let's come back and talk about it a little bit. But look at verse 6. He believed the Lord and it was accounted to him for righteousness. So we'll come back to these passages here and talk about them. Several from Romans here when we get to the end and start talking about some lessons for us here. But look at this word, he believed. What did Abraham believe? What did God just told him? Yeah. God counts the stars. All the nations will be blessed through your seed. What seed? He has no seed. So, even though all the descendants will be blessed through him, and he has no son this time, but he believed God. That's the faith part. We'll talk about this some more at the end over here. He believed, but he still didn't have understanding. He didn't understand how it's going to all happen. Just like when he left Ur, he didn't know where he was going. Remember that? Go to the land that I'll show you, unknown land. So, he believed God, but he's still trying to understand it. So God tells him, your people are going to be, his verse says, how am I going to know that? So this is where the covenant comes in. So how am I going to know that this is going to happen? So, God goes back and uses the promise and what happened at Ur to illustrate to him the same thing that goes with the descendants. I brought you out of Ur. I told you I was going to bring you to a land. I brought you to a land. I gave you that land. I'll give it to you and your descendants. So he's using that to illustrate the fact that I told you you have descendants, that your nation will be blessed through you. Brought you out and gave you this land. That's how you shall know that that's happened. So next he proceeds in the last part of chapter 15 into a covenant-making ceremony, if you will. It was not uncommon that they used at that time. So he tells Abraham to prepare three animals, a three-year-old heifer, a three-year-old female goat, and a three-year-old ram, and some birds. And Abraham takes them and cuts them in half and lays them out, half and half and half. And part of the ceremony, which we see in a covenant type thing, would be the passing through between these. And so he prepares these sacrifices. He sits down to watch them then and keeps the birds chased off of them. And through this process, they ratify this covenant. I'll be your God. You obey what I tell you to do then. And to your descendants, he tells them again, to your descendants, I will give this land. That's what the covenant's about. Showing him the promise that I will give you, even though you don't have any seed. There's no seed yet there. But to your descendants, I will give this land. The first thing they're going to be strangers in a foreign country for 400 years. I bet that just kind of Abraham just totally wouldn't understand that. You can imagine. Your descendants are going to get this land, but first they're going to be in bondage 400 years, then I'll bring them back out and give them the land. I mean, just, you got to think of the fate that comes in here. It's amazing. But the land's going to go from the river of Egypt to the river Euphrates. The river Egypt is down at the very bottom southwestern corner of Canaan down there. And of course, we know the river Euphrates is way back off the north up there. So that's how God describes the land he's going to give to Abraham, or Abram. And several translations here, not all of them, but several translations in verse 18, I think it is, of chapter 15, say, to your descendants, I have given this land. Some did, I looked at several of them, and some used, I will give this land, like the others did. I caught my eye that several translations say, I have given this land to them, indicating it's as good as done, because God made the promise it would happen. Okay. So that kind of finishes up chapter 15. 15 is just this covenant that's God making with Abraham, and going through this ceremonial process here of ratifying this covenant that I will give you the land, I will bless you for your descendants. And Abraham, believing God, that's going to happen. Moving into chapter 16, I don't know exactly how much Sarah did now, knew about this and the promise that God was making to Abraham. He may have told her about it, talked to her about it. She may know this is supposed to be there. Don't really know that. But think about the fact that, I mean, God has just talked to Abraham about having this descendant. this heir that you're going to have here, this son is going to cause all these people to come from you. So Sarah says, look, we're getting old, there's no children, so she starts a plan to help that out. So she brings her handmaid, Hagar, to Abraham, and says, I haven't been able to have you a son, which was a curse, I don't think quite that bad, but in the time a woman having a son was a very big thing. And we will get to that later on. We get to Jacob, and all the sons he had, and the competition between the wives because of that. But Sarah had not been able to have a son, and she was concerned about that. The promises God had made to Abraham. So she brings her handmaiden into Abraham, Hagar, and says, have an heir by her. Give it to me that way. I don't have this place in the picture here. But if you go back to our verse we talked about earlier with Genesis 2:24, and God bringing husband and wife together, and not multiple wives, but husband and wife together. I know he permitted it during this Old Testament time. So did he approve of it? Did he like it? I don't know. But that verse just pops in mind and think about that. And then all these people have multiple wives that we see back a lot through here. So Abraham complies with Sarah's wish. He goes in and he sleeps with Hagar, and she becomes pregnant. She's going to have a baby. A son will be born. And that just brings them trouble. I mean, big time trouble, because now you see the jealousy, the spite, if you will, I'm better than you are, I can have a son, you can't, type situations going on between Hagar and between Sarah. So, Sarah now has regrets. Her plan's backfired, if you will. Yes, we got the son coming, but look what it's done to me, the relationship I have with Hagar now. So, she's despised by Hagar. I mean, she just, because of the fact that I am blessed, or you're not blessed, if you will, type situation. So she comes to Abraham, even though she had the idea and brought it to him to start with, and she comes to Abraham and says, it's all your fault. And blames him with what happened here. The relationship has come up. And she deals really harshly with Hagar then, because Hagar is her maidservant, her servant. So she just treats her terribly, deals harshly with her, the words that she used there. So Hagar runs. She gets away from it. She flees. She leaves. Takes her son and leaves. Well, it's not her son yet. She leaves even though she's expecting a son. But an angel appears to her, Hagar. And notice how the angel refers to her. Hagar, what? Sarah's maid. That's who she was. And the angel recognized that. And because of that, she was her slave, her maid, her handmaid. She had an obligation to go back and be with her. So that's exactly what the angel tells her. Go back to Sarah. Return to her. And it's not quite all that. It's going to be some more blessings we'll get to in a minute. But remember this point here. We're going to talk about this again. We have time at the end here just a minute. But the angel telling her to go back to Sarah out here. And submit yourself under her hand. Go back and be a handmaid to her. Go back and be a servant to her. That's what you are. Go back and fulfill your role there. But she tells her, you're going to bear a son. And he tells him, the name's going to be Ishmael. And you will have a great nation through him. You will have multiple descendants. And we'll get more about what Hagar tells Abraham about this a little later on. So, the child named Ishmael, he'll be a wild man, like a donkey, I think is the phrase she used there. And he goes back to Abraham. And then at age 86, Abraham's 86 when Ishmael is born. So he came into the country when he was 75, in there about 10 years in Canaan. Between the time he came when he was left Haran at 75, and now he's 86 when Ishmael's born. So that gets us to the end of chapter 16. Somebody got something I left out, messed up, need to talk about? I'm going flip too fast this morning, as usual. All right, 17 Getting to chapter 17 now. And Abram is now 99 years old. So time has passed again between chapter 16 and chapter 17. 86 when Ishmael was born, and now we're in chapter 17. And Abram is 99 years old. So 13 years old is how old Ishmael will be now. But Abraham still has no heir. So he says, who would be his heir? Someone died. That's back. Eliezer would have been it to start with, his servant, and now Ishmael. But that's not who God intended to be the heir. We'll get that very plain here. So God, again, talks about a covenant between Abraham and himself. I noted this as we went through here. When Abraham is in God's presence, look what he did. He fell on his face and talked with God. We're too good to get on our knees. Abraham, wealthy, wealthy, rich man. Servants everywhere. And yet when he's dealing with God, he has this humility, this submission to fall on his face and talk with God. So the promise is again, I'll make you a father of many nations. Plural here. Abraham. And he changes his name from Abram. I've been calling him Abraham all through here, but changed his name from Abram to Abraham. From a word that means a high father to a father of multitudes, a father of many nations, that Abram would be here. Again, it says, I'll make many nations from you. It'll be an everlasting covenant to you and your descendants, the nation as well as the land. I'll be your God. I'll give you the land. Again, the phrase is used, same phrase, as an everlasting possession. We already talked about when he says, I give it to your descendants forever, that forever will be the end of the dispensation. Not that they have, that the Jews will have the land now, but to the end of that dispensation. Same type thing coming in here. But what I do for you, I expect something from you. I expect obedience. I expect you to keep the covenant. But God, go back to that very first slide. God expects us to obey what he tells us. What he tells us to do. I'll be your God. You better obey me. Keep my covenant. And as a sign given here for the ratify the covenant this time with Abraham, and that is the circumcision of every male. Every male who is born in your house, bought with your money, every male in your household will be circumcised. Otherwise, you're cut off because you're not keeping that part of the covenant to show the covenant relationship with me, the circumcision. And then Sarai's name is changed to Sarah, meaning the mother of many nations. Abraham laughed at this promise. He fell on his face and laughed. Not anything like the laugh. We'll get to Sarah when she laughed in an unbelief type thing. Abraham, the laugh, think about the laugh is a thrill, a joy, a pleasure, it would bring him a joy, though he was going to have a son, a real son through Sarah. But again, he offered Ishmael as a substitute. Abraham, maybe still not quite convinced, I don't know. He offers Ishmael, and no, Sarah will have a son by this time next year. End it down to the exact time. So Abraham then takes and circumcises his household, everyone there, him and Ishmael, and all the men in his house. And that's the end of chapter 17. All right, surely somebody's got something that I left out, need to talk about when we're dumping this other stuff here. Anybody? Ready? Yeah. We ain't got there yet, right? Okay, anybody else? Mike? I have not got in there, but yeah, good point. Okay. Did you? Yeah, right. What Mike's mentioned is that Abraham through Isaac is the father of the Jewish nation, and Abraham through Ishmael is the father of the Muslim nation. Okay. And how does they play in our lives even today? Okay. Let's go back and look at a couple of things out of the lesson this morning. Talk about that. Let's go back to the slide we had earlier in chapter 15, the slide where it says he believed the Lord, he accounted to him for righteousness. Now this is when the promise is made about him that he would have an heir, have descendants of many nations. So let's look at some of these passages up here in Romans 4, 16 through 22. We're going to read that first, and Gary's going to read it for us. Turn if you want to and follow through with that. Romans 4, 16 through 22. Gary, please.
Give life to the dead, and cause those things which do not exist as though they did, who, contrary to hope, in hope believed, so that he became the father of many nations, according to what was spoken, so shall your descendants be. And not being weak in faith, he did not consider his own body, already dead since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb. He did not waver at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully convinced that what he had promised, he was also able to perform. And therefore, it was accounted to him for righteousness.
Okay. Apostle Paul here is talking about, we're not going to analyze this chapter 4 in depth, but we're going to get some points from it here if we look at it. But, again, we're talking about Abraham's faith at this point here. He believed in the Lord, it was counted to him for righteousness. Now, take off a little tangent here for a minute. As I was looking at various commentaries and looking at this thing, I read across one of the commentaries, and here is his analysis of this passage about Abraham, Genesis 5, 15, 6, about Abraham believing in God and his counted him for righteousness. He said that's one of the most important passages in the Old Testament. And the word I got on the slides here are almost exactly word for word from his comments. It's the most one of the most important passages in the Old Testament. It shows the doctrine of justification by faith. Here's his reason. Abraham believed, he put faith in God. True statement? True statement. Okay. And it was counted to him, his faith was counted to him for righteousness. True statement? True statement. Here's where he goes with it. He said there was no act involved, but that of the heart and mind. No actions required. No work of any kind. Justified by faith without any merit of works. Anybody got a problem with that? I see a few heads shaking. This commentator takes this passage and says it's one of the most important passages in the Old Testament because Abraham was justified by his faith with no works of any kind. Okay. Now, let's play with that a minute. We've looked at, you might want to turn to Hebrews 11 if you want to. We've looked at Hebrews 11 as we've gone through these various characters in the Old Testament here. But look at verse 4. Hebrews 11, verse 4. By faith, same faith we're talking about here. This is Abel. By faith, Abel, what? He offered a sacrifice. He did something, okay? He had working faith. He did something. Let's go to the next one here. Verse 7. We talked about this before. By faith, Noah did what? Built an ark, right? Prepared an ark. Now, what if Noah, God told Noah, it's going to be a big flood come, I'm going to wipe out the earth, I'm going to save you and your family. And Noah says, yes. By the way, go build this ark, build it like I tell you to. And Noah says, I believe you, but I'm not going to do anything. No actions based on his faith. You know, although where Noah would be had that happened. So the point of these two verses here is a working faith, an action-based faith. Obedience to God based on our faith. And let's get through an Abraham here. Go back to the earlier. God referenced this one in the talking with the chapter we talked about this morning. I brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees. I brought you out of Ur. Not knowing where you're going. That's what Hebrews 11:8 is talking about. By faith, Abraham did what? He obeyed God. He did what God told him to. He obeyed God. He was called to go out of the place which he received for inheritance, and he went. Not even know where he's going, but he went. So God tells Abraham, I'm going to give you a land. I'll show it to you. But you won't have it. Your descendants will. You'll never essentially have a house there. You won't be there. But 400 years from now, your descendants will have it. Abraham says, oh, that sounds grand. I'll stay here at Ur and wait for it to happen. You know, see how absurd that would be. Abraham obeyed God. He, when he told him to go, he got up and he went. All right. Now, look for the book of James, if you will. And let's look at what James talks about, this same exact time in Abraham's life. He references the same thing. We're going to look at James chapter 2. We're going to look at verses 2 through 24. Tim's going to read those for us. And then we'll go back and pick up some of these highlighted points here. Tim? I don't know how this commentator works around this passage. I'm not going to go study it and see what he says about it. I haven't done that. But look what it said here. James is talking about the same thing, same passage. He's referring back to Abraham here. And he says, don't you know, foolish man, that faith without works is dead? I mean, it starts out the very point here and says, if you got faith but don't have any works, it's a dead faith. It's not a working faith. Abraham, our father, was justified by works. And by works he was made perfect. That was part of it. And come to the very last line in there, he said, you're justified by works and not by faith only. Looking at this, the same point of Abraham here that we're talking about in his works. Now, three components involved in our salvation. I don't take anything away from any of them. First is, of course, the grace of God. If it were not for that, we'd have no hope. Everybody agree with that? Secondly, is our faith. We must have faith. And the third thing, then, is our obedience. You take two out of the three and it won't work. You take out any one part of it. If we're not for the grace of God, the other part wouldn't matter. If it weren't for our faith, the other two wouldn't matter. It takes God's grace, it takes our faith, and our obedience, and He'll give us the reward, the promise He's promised to us. Surely that stirred up some comments from somebody. Anybody? I got two more slides, I think. Yes, sir, Scott. But I don't take the medicine, right? Those of you who couldn't hear, Scott's talking about the intertwining between the words faith and obedience in the original text. A lot of times the words are interchanged in some translations there. And it's just, there's no way to separate the two. It illustrates once you go to the doctor and I have faith in the doctor, he's going to make me better, but he gives me medicine, I don't take it. You know, but you really have faith in the doctor and what he told you? I don't think so. We got 4 minutes of transit time, okay?
When we think about Abraham's faith, I think a lot of times we think of perfection. We should.
What?
Because we can read that, you know, that God had just talked to Abraham, and then Sarah came to him and said, oh, why don't you take Hagar? And he goes, okay.
But,
and he did that. And then when God comes down to him and tells him that Sarah now is going to have a baby, when it says that, he laughed and he said within his heart, and then we can see in the next chapter that God knew, of course God knew what he was saying in his heart, but really God didn't call that out. But what we see just a few minutes later is that he gets up and he circumcises all of his sons because that's what God told him to do. And so I think a lot of times we look at faith and other people look at it and go, oh look, Abraham didn't have faith because he laughed. No, I think he was still learning about God. You know, all he was seeing around him was that people this old don't have kids, and then yet he still had faith to get up and cut on his boys. And so, to me, that's where we got to realize what this faith is that it's just an understanding of I don't know what's going on, but this is what God tells me to do, and I just have to do it. And I think that's where.
And we see contrast. Sure, we can. We see contrast. We're talked about. What did he do when he went to Egypt in chapter 12? He lied. First, to save his own life. He's already been told he'd have descendants earlier in chapter 12. So, again, question of faith there. But when he's told to go take Isaac, we'll get to later on, and kill him, what did he do? He went. He obeyed. So, there's not perfection here, but there's this. It's constant learning and increasing my faith. Okay. Okay, let me take two more slides right quick. I've got up here just a couple more quick points. Remember Sarah's plan? When she was going to offer this plan because she was afraid it wasn't going to work out, what God had going to do with having a son? Yeah. We use our plan to replace God's plan. Don't come in and try to say, well, God's not quite getting it done. I need to do this. Or I need to work around this. Or, I don't see how it's going to happen that way. I better do this. When God tells us He's got a plan. He's got a plan. That's where faith and trust comes into it. We're not going to stick something in it. Doesn't matter there. And one more point I'll get up here right quick. When he appears to Hagar and tells her to go back and submit to Sarah. Think about what she's going back into. A very difficult situation. But God told her to go back. We don't always have pleasant situations. Think about the rest of this book we're going in here now. How about Jacob? He had to go off and work for two wives and work for Laban and change his wages 10 times. How about Joseph? He got sent into Egypt and the prison he was in there and all this kind of stuff there. You go on to David when Saul's trying to kill him, or go on to Christ and maybe men treated them, or go on into Paul and all the difficulty he went through. Life is not always going to be good. Sometimes we have to, in order to do what God wants us to do, we have to go through some difficult situations. That's another thought I come out with this up here. Okay, your time's up. Thank you.